Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's up? This is DeJuan Boyd, a.k.a. DJ Rabbit, representing Rabbit Productions, hanging out chilling with my girl, Cy Boogie. That's right, Cy Brown, right here on LifeRemixedRadio.com. Say word.
Hey, everybody, it's your girl, Cy Brown, and I think it goes without saying, we have a black president. I don't know what else to say, what else to do, what else to shout. I'm surprised I even have a voice. I was stressing because I was like, oh, my God, I don't even have a voice anymore. A lot of stuff happened yesterday. I was at home, and my production assistant, you all know Malikia, she came over to my house, and we had a bite to eat really quickly and headed on over into New York City to Kevin Powell's election night party. And I think many of you know Kevin Powell. He was he wrote for Vibe, and he was on MTV's Real World. And he actually just ran for Congress, but unfortunately he did not win the congressional seat. I think it was for the 10th congressional seat in Brooklyn. But he did say last night at his party that he is running again in 2010. So I think that is absolutely fabulous. Big ups to Kevin Powell. We're going to try to get him on the show. I uploaded to YouTube on Politics Remixed part of, well, I actually uploaded his speech on Politics Remixed. But what I'm actually doing is working on getting the whole night's events uploaded to CyBrown.com, which is our social network. So that way, when you just log in to check your email or you log in to check your account, the video will be right there on the homepage. It just took a little bit longer with the editing process and all of that stuff, so that didn't get up as quickly as I would have liked. But other than that, I mean, it was a historic night. I was a cynic, and I've been a cynic this entire show. Not the entire show, I'm sorry, this entire election cycle. And you all have heard, I just kept saying, well, what's the deal with Barack? You know, I'm very untrusting of his campaign. Where did he come from? Where is this money coming from? And, you know, I was a supporter of Hillary Clinton to the fullest. And when he started winning, and then he hit, I believe it was February 5th, he won like 11 primaries in a row. I'm like, oh my God, this guy really stands a chance. And it's funny because I was watching Morning Joe, MSNBC, and they said, you know, Eugene Robinson from the Washington Post said a lot of African Americans, and I think we're just going to even lose all of those little titles. I think we're all just going to be called Americans now. But a lot of Americans, but for the sake of this conversation, African Americans, did not support him because they were very cynical as well. And yes, he did have a lot of support from the black community, but a lot of people, including myself, felt this guy is never going to win. It's never going to happen in our lifetime. I figured I would be dead and gone before I ever even saw a black man, you know, make it to the White House or even get this far. I remember back in 1984, I think it was 1985, Jesse Jackson came to my high school, and he wrote an autograph to me, and it said, "Dear Saida, push for excellence," and P-U-S-H was in capital letters. That was in 1984. I mean, that was like 25 years ago. I was, you know, like probably a freshman or something in high school. But then Al Sharpton ran, and, you know, I remember when Al Sharpton was on stage, he was one of seven, and one of the news people said to him, Do you think you're going to win, or what do you think your chances of winning are? He said, my chances of winning are 1 in 7, because there were 7 people on stage and he was 1 of 7. So he said, 6 people here are going to lose. So my chances of winning are 1 in 7. So, I mean, even to look at things like that and just to realize the magnitude of what happened. And, you know, I didn't cry. I didn't get mushy because I really didn't see color, and I've shared with you all, I grew up in a biracial home, so I was trained at a very young age to not see color, and I think that's why I registered as an independent when I first registered to vote when I was 18, because I said I always want to vote for the best candidate. It never dawned on me black or white. I looked at it as party affiliation, But I guess for the most part, party affiliation was blacks for Democrats, whites for Republicans, I guess. So I registered as an independent, but I really didn't see color. So when so many African Americans were getting excited and jumping for joy, I was like, he's a guy and he's a good candidate. Does anybody see that? Does anybody see that he's a damn good candidate as opposed to he's a black guy? Let me just say something really quickly in the chat room. Hey, True, and hey, the High Road. The High Road says, what does that mean, not see color? Well, I can only speak for myself. I don't see a person's color. I don't know how to say it any other way. And I think it's and I have to say a lot of it probably has to do with I grew up in an environment where everybody was beige. There are a lot of biracial people in my family. My sister is biracial. My mother's brother, his wife is Italian, so their child is biracial. And because of my mother's family's ancestry in the Islamic faith and where they're from, we have people in our family that look like Ethiopians, and some of them are very dark with perfectly straight hair. And if you guys have seen me, maybe like in pictures or something, my hair can be curly one day, straight the next, because the texture of my hair is soft as well. So I never looked at people just in general as, oh, this person is white or this person is black, just by virtue of just by the mixture of my family, I never really looked at people from a color perspective. But I've been starkly reminded over time that I am black and that I should not forget that. And that's just through life experiences. So that's that. I don't know. I hope that's the answer that you were looking for. I'm not quite sure that it is. I always thought that biracial people would see all colors as opposed to one or the other. Well, I'm totally black and I'm dark. My dad is black, as is my mother. But like I was saying, like with my mother's family, you know, she has straight hair, I have straight hair. So I've always had people ask me, well, what are you? Even though I'm dark, you can't make me I'm black. But it's just weird how you look at people and you try to take people for who they are. So let me just go back into the chat room. I always, either for that matter. Well, yeah. I posted up in our Cy Brown network my video of going to vote, my voting experience yesterday. And I documented it from leaving my house at 6:15 in the morning and all the way up until voting, where they made me shut off my camera. So I don't know if anybody had an opportunity to watch it. Take a quick look. It's probably 5 or 6 minutes. And again, I said at the top of the show, I'm uploading video from the party that I went to last night in New York City. Just everybody shouting and roaring, and today is just a great day. It really felt like Christmas. I have a caller. Let me just see who this is from the 908 area code. Hey, caller, this is Saida. You're calling from the 908 area code. Are you listening in, or do you have a comment?
Well, you know, I just tuned in. Hello, Saida. This is Lalisa Williams. I know. I just really wanted to call in just to show my support for what you're doing. And, you know, you come to our church and you really ministered in a powerful way to young people. I'm at work. I don't often get a chance to get on the phone around this time of day. But today I made it my purpose to do that. So I'm going to just listen in and see what everybody's talking about.
So much, and let's connect soon. Let's have lunch because you're right in my neck of the woods.
Yes.
It's absolutely
wonderful.
A pleasure. I'm going to put you on hold. Thank you so much for calling in for the support. I appreciate it.
Not a problem.
Well, everybody, yesterday you heard from my grandmother. I'm going to bring my grandmother in. My grandmother is 87 years old. I have actually two people that I'm bringing in, and I just want us to hear in her own words how she feels. Yesterday she shared with us about the election, so let me just bring her in very quickly.
Hello.
Hey, Grandma, how are you?
I'm okay. Just
good.
Happy to got to see the election.
Grandma, I think that's a wonderful thing. I'm so excited and so happy. How does that make you feel?
It made me feel that I shed tears because to know that I live at 87 years old to see this happen. That history made history, and I knew about it.
Well, I'm happy, Grandma. Just how do you think our lives are going to change?
Well, the thing of it is, they call this the United States of America. So people are supposed to be united here, and I think it will begin to do better.
One of the things, I was watching The View today, and Sherry Shepherd, or Whoopi Goldberg, said that Barack Obama spoke to our young black men and told them to pull up their pants, but maybe because it's coming from a man such as him, that he will, the young men will stand up and take their rightful place in society.
Maybe so.
Do you think that's going to work, Grandma?
I hope it does, because they need somebody that is in... you know, up there that they can respect and everything and be telling them, you know?
Yes, ma'am.
So I'm just so happy because they don't have to go around with their pants down like that.
Well, I've spoken of you several times on the radio, and I've looked at pictures of you and Grandpa and you know, you all sitting at the table and everybody's dressed so neat and everybody is so pulled together. Do you think black people will ever get back to that time when we are just so proud? Tell them, Grandma, your story about riding in the streetcar, what you wouldn't do when you pressed your clothes.
When I was working and you put starch in your clothes and when you sat down they would wrinkle, I would stand up and on an empty streetcar and ride to work standing rather than to sit down and wrinkle myself up so I wouldn't be going in all wrinkled up. And that's what I used to do. But my mother used to tell me that would kill me one day being so, you know, up on things like that, you know. And I would tell her that I just like to be together, and right today, my niece Doris, as a little girl, used to follow me around. I want to be like you, Lillian, and stay dressed up like you.
Well, it worked because you passed that on to Daddy, and Daddy has passed that on to me, and I've passed it to my kids, even though my kids... What's going on? you know, it's that point that's how proud black people were as people.
That's right. And but the thing of it is, when they come up now, they listen to what's out in the street quicker than they want to listen to you.
Yeah.
And this is what makes it sad.
Yeah.
The other kids are not like that. Why should I be different? You know what I mean?
Right.
And so, but I tell your kids and my grandkids that you want to always look neat. I think because even as old as your grandmother is now, she stays together and gets up and put her clothes on through the day. I don't be around the house without my being dressed.
Yeah, and everybody, she is telling you the absolute truth.
Yes.
As a kid, I would want to just kind of lazy around the house, and she would get up, take a bath, get dressed, and then I can relax.
That's right, and whatnot.
Well, I'm hoping, Grandma, that our young black men in particular see Barack Obama.
I hope so, too, because I was glad when Daquan went to the poll, and I was glad there was no line there.
Everybody, Daquan is my oldest son who lives with my grandmother, so just so you know, she's talking. You know.
And he walked right in and voted.
Is he there, Grandma?
Mm-hmm.
Put him on the phone.
Huh?
Put him on the phone, please.
All right.
You guys are hearing the show live and living color. I have one more person who's going to join us today, and it's my uncle, who is 92 years old, and he still drives. And, True, I didn't forget about you. I'm going to pick you up in a second. But I thought it was important to do this show specifically today to hear from the words of our elders. And it resonated with me that Barack Obama took the time to go see his
Hello?
Hey, Daquan, how are you?
I'm all right.
Listen, how was your voting experience yesterday?
It was popping. The person I voted for won.
Well, that's good. I don't be mad at me, but I have you on the air. I was talking to Grandma, and then she started talking about you. So don't get caught off guard. But just tell me a little bit about your voting experience yesterday.
I pretty much came in there knowing who I wanted to vote for, so it wasn't a toss-up, really. It was a cool experience. I didn't really know what I was doing, but it was hot.
Can you, I just want you to share one more thing, Daquan, before we get off the phone, and I'll probably see you this afternoon, but aside from that, can you just speak up a little bit more clearly, because you sound a little muffled. How do you think, Daquan, at 19 years old, and, you know, the tension that you and I have had, and the good times and the bad times, how do you think Barack Obama's candidacy is going to change your generation?
That I don't know. Truthfully, I don't.
Why?
I'm not sure how anything's going to turn out. So I just hope things become better. Like, hopefully a lot more opportunities will open up and things become less stressful. So hopefully Barack can help out with that.
Well, I'll tell you, Daquan, I am so proud to be your mother. Everybody, this is the young man who is on the cover of my book, Can Hip Hop Be Holy? He is the absolute love of my life, and so you heard it right here from the mouth of a 19-year-old. He's just hoping for opportunity. Do you think it's going to come, Day-Day?
Oh, yeah, it's going to open up eventually. I just
hope
soon.
Well, you said sooner than later, right?
Yeah.
You can't make it happen fast enough?
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me. Very impromptu. I had Grandma scheduled, but since she said you were there and I didn't talk to you yet today, I was like, well, put Daquan on the phone. All right, Day-Day. I love you. Tell Grandma I'll talk to her later.
All right, Ma.
Bye, baby.
See.
All right, everybody. If you guys have never taken a peek into my life, you have taken a peek into my life right now. The beauty about that whole dialogue that just took place is the fact that you heard it from a woman who's 87 years old, who was born in 1921, and my son, who's 19 years old, who was born in 1989. Look how they both shared the same message. They're hoping that this guy brings about change, and they're both hopeful. And today I blogged about the fact that I'm such a cynic, and it is my prayer that I lose some of my cynicism and that I can trade it in for hope and possibilities. So anyway, let me bring in True real quick before I bring my uncle in, because my uncle is on standby. True, are you with us? Okay, I'm going to put him on hold. All right, everybody. I'm going to bring my uncle in real quick.
Well,
Cousin Katie, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
I'm doing very well. Is Uncle Leroy available, please?
Well, is it Vaida?
Yes, ma'am.
Huh?
Yes, ma'am. It's
yes, just a minute, darling. Hold it. Hey, Bernard, I have to call you back. I got a call coming from somewhere. Can I call you back?
Cousin Katie, it's just me. You guys just got to be a little bit patient. These are all like us. senior citizens, so they were like, call into your radio station. What is that? So I said, I'll call them. Hello?
Hey, girl.
Hi, Uncle Leroy. How are you?
Oh, man, I'm joyful.
You're happy today?
Oh, deep within. I get so emotional when, I start, I had some friends just call us from way down in Florida. I had to give the phone to Kate. I can't even talk about it. Nobody don't even know what it means to old people like us.
And Uncle Leroy, you're 82. I mean, you're 92, right?
That's right.
I mean, we were at your house. Son and I were at your house a week ago, and we sat in your living room all Sunday afternoon, and we had such a great conversation. And when we were at your house talking, we were just saying how this could be a great day. Did you ever think it would really happen?
No, never dreamed of it. There was always an element of doubt in our mind, you know. But it, last night, I don't think we went to bed until in the wee hours of the morning. And to see how the people was responding. And you remember now, we couldn't have done it alone, so we had to have some of the other group too, you know. And I was in a, we live in a building with what the state used as a voting place. And I watched all those young people. They were every hue, every shape, disheveled, immaculate. Oh, I don't even know how to describe them, but they were coming. And I was awake because I had told the people who live in the building that I'd be down there at 6 o'clock. When I woke up and looked out the window, the whole parking lot was parked cars. Oh, no order, no nothing. Just parked and run up there because they wanted to be first in the line and all that kind of stuff. I never believed such a thing could happen.
Well, you know, I just got off the phone with Grandma, and Grandma was feeling the same way. She said that she never, and then, you know, she put Daquan on the phone. So I talked to her, I talked to Daquan, now I'm talking to you. It makes my heart feel so warm that we all have possibilities.
Yeah, it's something I never dreamed, my God. We had it in the back of our mind thinking of it. Will it ever rise up? I told someone this morning, this man, the possibility of this man becoming Jesus all over again, reincarnated in a black man's body. What he could do with this country if it's within him, you know.
Do you think that that's really the case, that Jesus has been reincarnated into Barack Obama?
Oh, my God, my God. But could be. I can tell you one thing I heard. I remember listening to Billy Graham many years ago, and he was at one of those big public meetings, and he said, don't be surprised now when you get to heaven and you find out he's a man of color. My God, my God.
You know, I touched on that. You know, I took the picture of you and I when I was at your house a week ago, and I put that in my new book. Remember I told you?
Yeah.
But the book really talks in detail about Barack Obama being the son of God.
Yeah.
Didn't want to hear
well,
that.
To those of us that believe in him, you know, he tells us he makes all things possible, you know. So we just have to believe it, that's all. We have to believe it.
Well, Uncle Leroy, I'm so happy and so honored to speak with you today. You know, you've watched me grow up. When I come to your house and you guys would take me to church and I'd sit on your lap, you've watched me grow into a grown-up.
Yeah. Don't we remember? All that helped us, too. Yeah. I tell you, my wife, when you all left last week, I told my wife, I said, it makes you feel good when so we have so many young people come and visit us. I think the people in the building think we're selling dope or something. Really? You think I'm kidding? They always say, the guard down there say, you got more young people come visit you than anybody in this building. And we do. We really do. All you too, white, black, all of them come. Yeah. We got a family. Their father and I were raised together, but they are, one of them live in Japan. She married a Japanese. You remember them from over there, but I guess you done forgot now. But they come here just as regular, and they live all over the world. Some of them, when they're in this country, they find us and come and visit us, bring their children. and the children looked Oriental, you know. And the people said, my God, what she got up there? Then we got a white, integrated couple comes here, and they come anytime. And his wife's always hugging on me out there in the yard. And all the people wonder, what in the name of God is he doing? Is he selling dope? I don't even like dope. I hardly like liquor, so you know I ain't bothering no dope. But they believe that. That's the life. If they want to believe it, go on. I know what's happening. They just come. Just like the one calls us from California, she said, we come because we love you.
Right.
And that's what, my God. And it makes you feel good to know it, too. Believe me, it keeps me keep me here. I know that. Of course, I was terribly, I was more worried than I was ill from the experience I had at driving, you know. And I thought maybe I done got something in my head or something because they told me they was looking for aneurysm or a tumor in my head, you know, but thank God they didn't find it. So, and then you all came by that Sunday, and Sunday I called a Saturday and said hi. Hey, that's good. He said, I'll be there Sunday. I said, my goodness, look at here. But it's good, good, really.
Well, I'm so happy. That's because we love you, and you've poured so much into me growing up, you know.
Yeah, well, we did the best we could. God gave us what we had, and if it was of some good, just like I say, this man here, you, what we got now. And not only that, it seemed as though he inspired the whole world. They've been showing over in Africa and in Europe and all them little islands where the people are rejoicing because a black man is at the head of the United States of America. Do you know the power that it is in him if it's used right?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
He's going to make big things happen.
I really hope so. I hope God stays with him, really. I really do.
I'll tell you one more thing before we get off the phone. I don't want to hold you too long. That they said on TV that Barack Obama last week spoke to our young people and said, and pull your pants up. And
yeah.
Young people, especially our young black men, and I've been saying I'm going to write a book about black men for like the last month. I got it. I guess put that on my to-do list.
Yeah.
Young black men now are going to rightfully take their place.
I hope so. God knows I do. Time for us to start acting like it and take the leadership position, what he should be, because they've been standing behind women for so many years. They had to do it to survive, you know.
Yeah.
But they took it to the extreme, I think.
I think so, too.
Yeah, I think they take it to the extreme. Yeah.
Well, I have to go. I have to get back to work.
All right, darling. Thanks for calling me. Really? I'm joyful inside, but yet still I'm so emotional. Just to talk a little bit, I fill up so quick here lately, and I don't want to do that with you, really, I don't. It's not my intentions, but I can't help it.
Of course.
Have a good day, eh?
Listen, I love you so much, and we'll be over to visit you, if not this weekend, then next weekend.
All right, darling. You welcome anytime. We're here.
Okay.
All right, have a good day now.
Bye-bye. Well, you get it about as raw as you can on this show. We just heard from my 87-year-old grandmother who I said, you know, we come from a strong stock. And I said, she gets up and she cooks. My uncle, who you just heard from, my Uncle Leroy, he helped me move into my grandmother's house when we moved from Atlanta, and he carried furniture. I mean, I don't know. Like, look how strong our people are. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, the magnitude and the power and the strength that we as a people have. You heard both of them. They are not frail individuals, and I'm sure there are people that have frail elders in their family. But both of them had the same message. Look at God. Look what God can do. And this show is not getting into a debate. I don't want to see it in the chat room because that's not about today's show, about Jesus and God and power in one man. I don't want to change the direction of this conversation, not today. But the same message came from both of them, how with God, all things are possible. And I never believed this. I'm being very honest with you all. I never believed it. Yeah, I said, okay, yeah, with God, all things are possible. But I just think it's something that was needed for us to hear from our immediate elders about what happened last night. I see True just joined us back. True, what's going on, buddy?
What's good, family? I apologize about the last time. You know, on the grind.
It's all good. Here now.
Yes, amen. Thank you. You know, I just wanted to make a brief comment on the statement earlier because I missed so much in the interim. The high road was, we were talking about the race relations and being, I think the high road is from New York too as well.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I learned is growing up in New York is that there is such a vast amount of cultural diversity. And growing up and going to school surrounding so many different cultures, I can see where you just look at people as gray. Yes, you acknowledge that your Latinos may be brown, or some of the Jewish people may be white, or Asians may be white, but growing up in a multicultural environment, it just don't allow you to look at people that way unless something happens to interrupt that point in your life. Because like you, briefly, I grew up, my family is very multicultural, and being that my family is multicultural, when we all get together, we don't single anybody out. Well, you know, you're the lighter one and you're the darker one. We're just a family that happens to have a various amount of cultural people. So I can understand that.
Well,
Brooklyn.
I appreciate it, and I have to say, you know, and Dropping Seed can talk about it because I talked about it a lot in my book. I didn't understand race until I was about 8 years old. I thought, because I remember when I lived with my mother and my white stepfather in Boston, which is very racist, I went to visit my grandmother, and my grandmother said to me, well, you know, the one you just heard from, you know, she's of older, a prior generation, so she was very upset that when my mother and father divorced, my mother went and got a white husband. And she says, well, I remember her asking me, she said, well, Saida, what color are you? And I said, well, I'm purple or blue. And she called my mother and told my mother that my mother was confusing me, that I didn't even know that I was black, that I wanted to be purple and blue, and that, you know, it was a disgrace. And now this is the lady you were just hearing from. But that's because we lived in such a different time. But when I moved to New York, you really don't see color. And I have to add to that, when you live in New York City, and I've said this before, there is a very big distinction between living in the Bronx, Brooklyn, Queens versus living directly in New York City, which is where I live. I saw everybody. So I really don't see color. As corny as it sounds, I really, really don't. But I started to notice color at this point, when I would visit my father and my stepmother and my grandparents in North Jersey, I noticed how everybody was blue collar, everybody worked, we had Sunday dinner, you know, we all in the same neighborhood. My grandmother has lived in the same house probably since my father was born. So there were roots. There were very, very deep roots, very cultural roots. I told you guys hundreds of times where I went to church and my great-grandparents' names are etched in the pew. That's when I really started to notice color because everybody was black.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, wait a minute. And so I'm telling all my black friends that, you know, live by my grandmother and my father about the things I was doing, and I began to get ostracized because when I would tell them, oh, me and my friend Marissa, or me and my friend Josh Horowitz, or me and my friend Noah Shackman, you know, all my Jewish friends, they were like, well, we don't do that. Well, ew, you hanging with all them white people. Ew, and that is how I noticed color. It wasn't something that I noticed. It wasn't anything that I picked up on. The people on my, I hate to say my black side of the family, they're the ones that made me aware of color because it was not something that I noticed. And that's why when you see all these little kids preaching hate, that comes from the home.
Absolutely. And you know what's funny about that you would say that, because I do believe this, and I blogged on it this morning, which I don't normally blog on politics, so it's not my thing to blog on, but I noticed that a lot of the kids being here in California, the white kids in general, they were so proud to vote for Obama. Not to say that there wasn't any favorable McCain people, but, I mean, because of the race relations, the way that it is in the paradigm is changing,
uh-huh.
It's a good thing that people are beginning to see less of a color. Because,
yeah. To
be honestly, about the situation, if it wasn't for the young folks, we may be singing a whole different tune this morning.
Yes. Yes, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. But you know what? I think it's more than just young people. And I remember I got into a heated debate with my father, and my father is very opinionated, and he is in his late 50s, and said, "Daddy, Obama is never going to win." And he said he may. And I'm like, well, people are not going to vote for a black man. You would think the opinions would have been reversed, but they weren't. My father said to me, "Saida, when white people in middle of America cannot feed their children and cannot feed themselves and they start getting missed meal cramps, all of a sudden color is not going to matter." And I have to say publicly, my dad was right. Because there's a lot of people that are experiencing what we've been experiencing our entire lives.
Mm-hmm.
And they're shook. They're like, okay, do we go left, right, up, or down? And then this is how someone such as Barack Obama, who appeals to everybody, gets ushered in.
And by the way, make sure you download this CD right here and just cut out the part when you said, "Daddy, you was right," and send it to your dad. He will love you for it.
You know what? Dad would love to hear me acknowledge publicly that he's right, while my mother is probably cringing because she taught me to speak better than Daddy, you was right.
but love is love just the same, though, you know, no matter how you put it together. So that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, that's funny. I kind of go in and out of, you know, King's English and, like, Red Sky English.
You know what? So does our president-elect, and I think it's a beautiful thing. Once again, it shows diversity. And along that line, speaking briefly on diversity and being from the city of New York, I think that's something that's very important that New York teaches that a lot of other places are not quite there yet, is diversity. Because even though I've left New York 21 years ago, I still feel that diversity is important. And the good thing about diversity, if you have it within yourself, that means that you most likely know how to get along with others. And you can carry on and see other people's point of view.
I agree. True. I'm going to put you on hold 1 second. We have
absolutely.
Another caller from 919. Are you there? Are you listening or you have a comment? Okay, I think our caller from 919 was just listening in. Well, we thank you, caller, for listening into the show today. True, let me just read some of the stuff that's jumping off in the chat room. How Elegant was saying my first best friend, BFF, was Latino and the second was white. How Elegant says, "Yeah, I woke up today and the room was brighter, but I left the drapes open last night." You guys are funny. You know, there's such significance in what happened, but here's the beauty of it. NY Oil was on the show yesterday, and he is such a dear friend of mine, but this is what he said. What Barack has done has made a lot of little small changes. And I think when we look at all the little small things that he has done, that's where big change comes from. When he made that speech last night, he spoke directly to me. And I was in a room with hundreds of people at a party who just turned Jay-Z down. And the video will be up on the website probably right after the show. But the point is this. He spoke directly to Cy Brown. When he said, "For all of you that couldn't believe and you were cynical, you have to put that away," and I'm paraphrasing. But you know something, True? He probably spoke directly to you as well.
Absolutely.
He spoke to my son. Everybody was able to extract a little piece of that. One more thing, and I want to bring you into comment on this, is this morning on Morning Joe, they were talking about the significance of him making that speech in Grant Park. Just the fact that that speech took place in Grant Park speaks to an entire different group of individuals. Just the fact that Michelle had on a black and red dress spoke to a different group of individuals. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, everything that went down last night spoke to everybody where they're at. And that's the beauty of God and the beauty of Barack Obama, that he has an innate ability to speak to us right where we are.
Well, I definitely would agree with that, but I want to piggyback on something that was crucial to me that stood out. And that was at the end of his speech. You know, after all the trials and tribulations he's going through as far as losing his grandmother and going through the battle of the election for 2 years, to see a man and a woman embrace each other and visibly are telling each other that they love them, that was a moment that stood out to me. And then to put a little icing on the cake, to see a black man and a black woman with their children embrace each other and showing love, added a little extra to it for me. And that was a nice way to end it, the embracing. And you can just see the love that the two of them have. If that doesn't send a message media worldwide, I don't know what the message would be. Black people do love each other. There are successful black people. And it's being part and having successful black people, it just needs to show more than the norm of people standing on the corner maybe drinking or smoking. Because that's not total America. That's a piece, like everything else, of America.
Well, I swear he was going to hit her on the butt.
That will be when they walk through the White House doors.
All you Barack lovers, don't take this the wrong way. I swear they are going to run through that place naked. They are going to bring in fried chicken. Let's be honest here. You know, everything is not going to be creme brulee and beef Wellington and shaved vichyssoise. They are going to bring their swagger to the White House. But you know what? I feel so good and so comfortable that they know when they can have that swagger and when they need to pull back. I mean, she's a lawyer, for God's sake.
Mm-hmm.
Lawyers know how to work a room. They know. They know exactly what they need to do. And, I'm just happy that their two girls are nice little girls. And I'm going to tell you one more thing. Yesterday when they went to vote, I don't know if this is of any significance to anybody, but both of their daughters had braids in their hair. Their hair was not pressed. Their
right.
hair was just, like, that's the stuff I look at. And it's not to be, like, picking them apart. I don't want anybody to think I'm trying to pick them apart. But these are the things that white people, or white America, not white people, other persuasions need to see. Because when they see Michelle Obama on The View, they see her all zhuzhed up. They see her all with her J. Crew outfit and this and that. But when they went to vote yesterday, Michelle's hair was pulled back in a bun.
Sure
it
was.
And Sasha, well, the tall one, I don't know which one is which, one had little braids in the front, and one of them had, like, her hair pulled back in, like, a bun. There was no press and curl. There was no TCB, no live relaxer. That's what little black girls look like. And I'm hoping that our little girls see the distinction, that they don't have to lose their identity, but it's okay to be poised and polished and pulled together.
I would definitely agree with that, which indicates, like you just mentioned earlier, there is a time and a place for everything. You know, there is a time and a place where you could be hanging out at the White House, and then you can go down to the local Y and play some basketball and be trash-talking on the court. It doesn't necessarily mean because you are representing one thing that you have to be untrue to who you are. Your culture and your background is your culture and your background. And your job or whatever it is that you're asked to do, that's a whole nother situation. You know, and Cy, real quick, one of the things that I did blog about this morning is that what happened last night was just step one. Step two, the inauguration. Step three, all of us, and when I say all of us, race, political affiliation, gender preference, everyone has to get together as multiple villages and come together to make all of this change work. Otherwise, it will be in vain. So when people think that, because I was just talking to someone on my way in at a coffee house, and she said, well, now we'll see. I said, well, now it's not about the see. It's about the do. So we can't see anymore. We have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's going to get it done.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Everybody, well, somebody just agreed with you in the chat room. Hold on, let me pull it up. Somebody just said that's right, true. I have so many windows open. Hold on, let me just move the screen over. I was kind. The Hyro said I was kind of disappointed when they stopped wearing the braids. Well, I think them not wearing the braids was for that moment. I can't fathom that you're not going to see our little girls with their braids anymore. I just can't believe that to be the case. I think you're going to see them with braids. I think you're going to see them fill out. And what's going to happen is it's going to change the way people view black children even.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was a youth director for my church, and again, I've said it to you, I've been very cynical about our young people. Y'all see, I have a 19-year-old and a 14-year-old. So I see these kids from top to bottom. And it's enough to make you cynical to be like, are these kids ever going to change? And when my grandmother was saying, when she talked to us earlier about children, about the guys pulling their pants up, she was speaking about my kid. I'm not going to be on the air. I yell at Daquan, pull your pants up, Miles, pull your, you know, I do it all the time. So I'm hoping maybe now instead of me saying it twice a day, I only have to say it once a week. I'm saying that really honestly. But just, and we've talked about this before, what about the young people that don't have a Saida as a mom that are kind of lost and have lost their way, but now see this man like, yo, he made it. How does that impact my life? I just want to put one question out to everybody because we are running out of time very, very quickly. What impact, and I've asked this already in the show, do you think this is going to make on the lives of, number one, African Americans, number two, are young people? So somebody hit me up in the chat room. What impact do you think his candidacy is going to make on the lives of African Americans? And then number two, the lives of young people.
Well, Ms. Sai, what I can say to that is I believe that, one, he has used his candidacy to explore a lot of new avenues. I mean, you know, he used text messaging, which a lot of the young kids adapt to that. You know, I believe he was on Twitter. Don't really quote me on that one specifically, but I believe he was twitting, maybe not him, but his people were twitting as well. So I think that's very important to reach the young folks. So in the same sense where you identify with the young, you also teach as you go along, and I think that that's what is going to be important to the young, that you can see them, you know they're there, and how you moderate the change. Again, it all goes back to the same thing, change.
Mm-hmm. I want to read something to everybody as we start to really wind down the show. I don't believe the time went, you know, so quickly. I read this yesterday at the top of the show, and it's something that touched me very near and dear to my heart. And I actually used this as the back matter, as part of the back matter for my book, Politics Remix. Michelle Obama gave a speech in February at UCLA, and she was speaking to the crowd of people that may not be as hopeful as they were up to these most recent days. And this is a direct quote from Michelle Obama's speech at UCLA, February 2008. Barack Obama will require you to work. He is going to demand that you shed your cynicism, that you put down your divisions, that you come out of your isolation, and that you move out of your comfort zone, that you push yourself to be better, and that you engage. Barack will never allow you to go back to your lives as usual. Uninvolved, uninformed, you have to stay at the seat at the table of democracy with a man like Barack Obama, not just on Tuesday, but a year from now, in 4 years from now, in 8 years from now, you will have to be engaged. And true, that is exactly what you just said.
Yes, I believe that. I really truly believe that.
I do too, and, you know, I guess my words to everyone is let's just not take it for granted. Let's not just fall back, okay, we got a black president, whoop-de-woo. How can we effectually bring change? How can change come in such a way that changes, without being too cliche-ish, the way we're viewed in the world and the way our lives are conducted? So I'm very excited. I'm very, very hopeful. I'm very optimistic. And I'm saying to everybody, right now it is 12:53 p.m. on Wednesday, November 5th, and I am effectually shedding the deep cynicism that I have towards people, towards life, towards things that happen in our world, and I'm trading in my cynicism for hope and possibility, because I was one of those cynics. So you guys are going to watch me grow some more and really, really take a look at how we can make this world a better place. True, you want to give any final thoughts before we jump off the air for today?
You know, I'll say thank you very much, first of all, for allowing me to share your airspace. The one thing that I would say in closing is that it's time that we all do come together. And you know, Martin Luther King started it with "I Have a Dream" speech. Okay, well, now we have reached that pinnacle right now of "I Have a Dream." It's not a dream anymore. It's a reality. And going forward with our realities that we now have is the first 44th black American president. Now it's time for us to all step the bar up and do what we have to do so that way we can kick down the door for all the others coming behind him.
Right. Well, True, what's your blog post? If somebody can just, you know, post this up in the blog. Hold on, let me see if I can write it down, too. Let me just read a couple more things real quick. The High Road is saying no more excuses. Yes, we can. There are some ways that may say he did it, but we don't have what he has. True, setting the bar is high and reaching the bar is part of the battle. The High Road says, I walk around with my sleeves rolled up and make it a point to enunciate and think more about what I say. Well, I've been doing that for years, and I just kept being called a white girl, so I just relegated to I'm just going to speak proper. But because of that, I've allowed my diction to be compromised. But anyway, the High Road says, I think that young people now have a higher standard of excellence to strive for and mimic. Plus, he made it cool to be excellent. That is really what it is. He made it cool to be excellent because, as you can see, I was raised for many years by my grandmother who would starch her clothes and not even sit down in a streetcar because she didn't want her clothes wrinkled. That's the environment in which I was raised. So to be teased when I went to school and teased at 11 and 12 and 13 and 14 because I spoke well, it was devastating. It was absolutely devastating. So, yeah, the High Road, I hope that young people do see that there's a higher standard of excellence. And now, like, my teenagers can say, you know what, I have a head start because my mom has been beating this down my head since I was born. Let's see. Oh, Tiff is working out, everybody. The High Road said, preach true, tear the roof off. okay, trueview.ning.com. Oh, okay, trueviewradio.ning. True, you have a Ning social network, too. All right, that's what's up. Everybody, let's join True's Ning site. And Dropping Seed, I believe, has one as well. True's is true, and it's trueveradio.ning.com. Mine is, you can just go to sideground.com, or you can go to liferemixed.ning.com. And Dropping Seed, if you have one, just let me know. True said, 4 minutes, Di. Good looking out, buddy. I love it. you know what? We're just going to end the show. And I just want to tell everybody, thank you so much for listening. Dewan is joining us tomorrow, and he and I connected after the election, after the victory last night, and already he started planning tomorrow's show yesterday. So please tune in tomorrow for our weekly Ecclesia Bible study where, you know, you can just learn how to be better us's. I always say that. I'm looking for new words to use. Now that we have President-elect Barack Obama, I guess I have to start doing dictionary, the word of the day again. Dropping Seed says his is the good, oh, the godlife.ning.com. Okay, the godlife.ning.com. and mine is liferemix.ning.com. Anyway, I love you all for listening, and I will talk with everybody tomorrow. And never forget that the light of God surrounds us, the love of God enfolds us, the power of God protects us, the presence of God watches over us. Wherever I am, God is, and wherever you are, God is. Thanks, God, and so it is. How Elegant, thank you so much for saying this is a great show. Everybody, stay encouraged. Please check out liferemix.ning.com. All the videos will be posted up there this afternoon. You can Google it, on search my name on YouTube, and you'll see some more political videos. And I just want to say, hey, I'm happy everybody Barack the vote, and we have a new president, everybody. I love you all, and I'll see you tomorrow. Peace.